This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk.
Happy birthday!
It snuck out. It is April 26, 2017.
It's April 26th!
Yeah, it is. It is. Welcome to Bicycle Talk. This week with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
You broke the curse!
I broke the curse. We'll get to that. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can please call or text at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can always visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past pod episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. So we have a lot of ways you can stream us and listen to us and learn more about bicycles. So every week I start out with, obviously, Fran has identified the fact that it is my birthday today. And there's a few things about my birthday that are important. One is that every year when I have a birthday, I try to take either the day of my birthday or another day close by off to go out and ride my bicycle my age in miles. So every year has been getting progressively longer.
And we're going to do it on Sunday.
That's what we're talking about anyway. We'll see. It's all weather related. You never know. It is still April. So
Sunday looks like the better day right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see when we get there. So anyway, I've been starting almost every show with Ron's rant of the week, and I have a rant for us, but I want to do something new, and I'm going to try to incorporate this into the podcast every year, every week, and radio show every week, and it's going to be called On the Positive Side. So we are not just ranting about things, and we can talk about some good things that are going on. On the positive side, I am going to talk about Senator Don Karam, who is from Colorado. He's a Republican senator from Colorado, and he is introducing a bill, or has introduced a bill, at the end of March, and it passed in committee last week. And there's a practice called coal rolling. And coal rolling is when you modify your diesel vehicle, your large diesel truck primarily, and you go by the cyclist and you leave them in a big cloud of dust.
We got coal rolled on Monday.
Yeah. Did you?
Cindy and I got coal rolled
anyway,
on Monday. By a Subaru. Is that possible?
If only if they're diesel, and I don't know of any Subarus that are diesel, so I don't know what happened there. That seems odd. But anyway, maybe you can do it with a gasoline car. I don't know. But what it does is it creates a smoke hazard for cyclists and pedestrians, and it makes breathing very difficult. So he has put a bill out there to make this, obviously it is illegal to do, but he also has a fine attached to it, which is great. Good for him. That's a smart move. So he's taking a stand against this, and against drivers who purposely pump exhaust onto cyclists and other road users. They're going to get a $100 fine. But on top of that, coal rolling is already indirectly, illegally, nationally under the EPA guidelines. The Clean Air Act prohibits tampering with vehicles in ways to bypass emissions regulations, which can yield fines up to $3,750. So the new statewide bill calls for levying an additional $100 ticket on drivers who expel exhaust in a manner that obstructs or obscures the view of another driver, bicyclist, or pedestrian. So tip of the cycling cap, as I like to say, to Senator Don Karam, who has gone after this. And I'm kind of guessing maybe Senator Karam is a cyclist. And maybe that's where this all came from. But he certainly has touched on something that is good. It's a good thing that he's doing. It's a very good thing. And if you are a coal roller, if that's what you like to do and that's where you get your amusement, please grow up. Okay? I'm going to be frank about this. It is juvenile. It is immature. And it's not safe. So please grow up, and you know, if I ever catch you doing it, you will get videoed, you will get photographed, You will get turned in. I will call the state police on you. And I expect that from my listeners out there, too. Get the license plate number. Report them. Report them right away. And it's, you know, we can do all this now on our bikes. Many of us now ride with cameras while we're riding. We are actually recording your activities on the road. So if you do something really foolish in your vehicle to a cyclist, be aware of the fact that it's probably being filmed. Not that it might be filmed. It's probably being filmed.
And it's not just that we're going to take our camera, you know, get our phone out of our pocket and video you. Some of us have GoPros.
Yes.
So they're running.
And there's another company, Shimano, that makes them. And then there's another, Garmin now makes one. There's a number of different manufacturers out there now that are making cameras that are built right into the bicycle. So you can carry it with you and you can film your entire ride, which would also film any incidents that you might have on that ride. So, you know, think about that, please. It's like I said, it's immature, it's foolish, and it makes no sense whatsoever except for your own personal amusement if that's what it is that you're getting out of that. But please, give us some respect out there. We'll do the same for you if you do it for us. So anyway, that was one thing I wanted to bring up, and that is so a very positive note for Senator Karam in Colorado, who is paying attention, and he is pushing this forward. So that's a good thing. Now we're going to go to the rant of the week. We're going to make that little switch over, and the rant of the week is bike snobs. Okay, now, what qualifies you as a bike snob? Well, you could be on your high horse about, you know, everything you do cycling, and cycling is the only thing in your world, and everybody should be riding a bike, which is me. I do that. I say that a lot. But I also have my eyes open and my mind open to other things around other than just cycling. Now, the bike snob I'm talking about is more the one that when you're out riding your bicycle, and let's say you're in a group, or maybe you're all by yourself, and you're riding down the road, and here comes a cyclist the opposite direction. And when they come the opposite direction, you give them a friendly, "Hi, how are you? You know, great day for a ride, isn't it?" And they don't even look at you, or they sneer at you and just keep pedaling. What's the point? What is the point there? Let's be friendly with one another. We both love to ride our bikes. That's great. That's a beautiful thing. So that's one level of bike snob. The other level of bike snob, well, first of all, let's go back to that for a second. Some bike snobs are so snobby that they are so involved with themselves and their ride and what they're getting out of their ride that they won't break stride from their workout so as to just give you a friendly hello. And it's just, really? Is it really that important? Are you winning the world championships? Are you training for the world championships? What is this? Why are you like this? What is the point?
Well, what if you're really in the middle of an interval and you're like doing like a really hard interval? You're doing like an all-out sprint and you're like huffing and puffing. And I mean, because sometimes if you're just riding, if you're just like on a long distance, you know, button saddle ride, that's one thing. But what if you're literally, you know, you're doing a practice time trial or you're doing a, you know, an all-out 10-minute interval?
So I'm going to mention something to you.
Yeah.
Because you bring up a good point.
Yeah.
You've done this.
I don't want to break my position.
I understand. And you've done these things called time trials, have
yeah.
you not?
Yeah.
Okay. And when you're doing a time trial and you're going along really, really fast on a time trial and a quote-unquote much faster bike racer type person or maybe triathlete person or whatever it is comes around you, what do they do? Do they say anything to you when they go by?
Yes, they do. They say, "Nice going. Keep it up."
Yeah.
They're really
Hello.
Nice to you.
You know what? You can do that.
I do.
You don't have to break your stride to say hello.
If I see somebody when I'm on my interval, I don't break my position, but I
no.
might, I'll look up and smile. I might give them a really big smile because I don't want to move my position.
Or I'll move my hand off the bar and wave to them.
Yeah,
but I'll acknowledge
yeah.
them as yeah. a person
Definitely.
Of like interest.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, that's so there's
yeah.
that. And now on top of that, there's the people that are out riding their bicycles and maybe they're riding in a group. Maybe they're riding by themselves because this goes either way. And there's someone out working in their yard and they're pulling weeds in their garden or they're mowing their lawn or they're, you know, just out playing with their kids in the yard. And you don't say hello. Say hello. Come on, guys. Wake up. Guys and girls both. Wake up here.
No, we say hello to everyone. You really should say hello to everyone.
Yep. Say hi to everyone. That increases our, that gives us a lot more, I'm trying to think of a collateral or whatever you want to call it.
Gives us more credibility. Gives us more visibility, right. and it humanizes us, right. Because people exactly. will look at us and think that we're just those annoying cyclists that are in the way.
Right.
And this makes us human. It's like, hey, we're actually people.
That's right.
And we're actually people who are good time. We actually care about you because you're also a person.
And we are people. We are doctors. We are lawyers. We are firemen. We are police officers. We are people that are going to be first responders in a very major emergency situation. That
we
you
are
may be
lay
in.
Midwives.
We are lay midwives. Shout out to Cindy. We are, we are people that we are educators. We are, we are people that are
social
involved
workers,
in your
counselors.
Community. We are involved in your community, and we are not the enemy. We are just people, just as you are. So just say hi to people. That's all. It's not that hard to do.
Yeah.
So, and you're out riding your bike and you're having a happy moment. Why not, spread the happiness?
And the other thing is, if you are friendly and wave and you're nice, it's going to inspire more people to ride bikes. People are going to look at you and go, look at that happy, friendly person. And they're nice to me. Maybe I should ride a bike too.
You got it.
Yeah.
You
That's how
it.
You be an ambassador. How snobby is Amber, right?
Not at all.
Exactly. No, so Amber is our friendly wonderful. Local bike racer. She waves to every. If you are with her, she doesn't miss anyone. She waves to absolutely everyone that goes by.
It's
she's an incredible ambassador. She's totally walks the walk.
She's a professional.
Yep.
Okay, and that's the reason she is a professional, and that's really really important. And so anyway, I'm not finding this. That's all right. So I have a little test here for you, Fran.
Okay.
And I thought I had a couple of tests, but I'm not finding the other one.
What's it about?
Well, anyway, so this test is going to be Bikes Plus Snobs. No, this is it. Are you a bike snob? Here it is. Are you a cycling snob? Quiz. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right. So we're going to take a little quiz here, and we're going to play Are You a Cycling Snob? And we press the play button here, and the first question that is asked is, have you ever used the term chapeau in a non-ironic way? And the answers are never out loud, bien sûr, I use it all the time, or would I say that?
The last time I said chapeau, I don't say the word chapeau very much, but I do know this song, cat, hat. In French, chat chapeau. In Spanish, he's a gato with a sombrero.
Is
that a no?
The question is, have you ever used it in a non-ironic way?
So that would be a yes, because in that song, that's humorous. It's his Cat in the Hat song.
Okay, you got to click on that one. Strava is three possible answers. The perfect opportunity to look down at others, a place to follow friends' achievements, or somewhere to log my ride data. Which one?
Well, it's two and three.
No, you have to choose one.
It's a place to look at my friend's achievements, and mm-hmm. it's also a place to log my ride. It's
both. Which is most important to you?
I guess it's going to be two, because I don't primarily use Strava to log my ride. I only use it when I'm not training. So let's go with two.
All right, I did. When it comes to chamois cream, do you have a favorite? Hold on. Yes, one for cold, wet days, one for hot. Two, what is chamois cream? And three, whatever the shop was selling.
Oh, no, it's a yes.
It's a yes.
but that's for health reasons.
It doesn't matter. Okay. You don't know what these results mean. Okay. So don't get defensive on your answers.
All right.
Okay? Well, okay. We're just trying to get some answers here.
All right.
When you ride past a bike shop window, you, A, look at the road ahead. B, look at your reflection in the window. C, look inside the shop.
See, look inside the shop. You want to see what bikes are in there or
there
who's in there.
Go. How many cycling caps do you own? Oh, boy. I have a wide selection of caps, color match, for my various outfits. B, I wouldn't be caught dead in one. Or C, I have one or two, mostly to keep the sun out of my eyes.
Well, I have one or two, and I almost never wear them. They were given to me at
you win
as
the
a
one
premium.
Or two, then. We're going to go with that. Does your sock choice vary based on your kit selection?
Oh, that's a big yes. So what are the choices?
So I'll give you the choices. Yeah, I could have answered this one for you. I buy my socks together with the kit, only to suit the weather, or no, whatever's handy. So I'm going to go with I buy my. That's the closest we can get for you. You have so many socks that match.
Except that if I do wear them to suit the weather, because if it's cold out, I wear wool socks.
No, you win on the A on that one. I'm sorry.
But what about?
I know you too well.
But if it's below 60 degrees, I wear the wool socks, and that at that point.
But of course. But you sorry. I'm gonna outvote you on this one.
But that's only true if it's above a certain temperature. If it's below 60 degrees, then I wear my wool socks, and those wool socks
are. Okay, here's a good question for you. Then, how many pairs of wool socks do you own?
Maybe six.
How many pairs of cycling socks do you own?
A lot.
Okay, I rest my case.
Okay.
Moving on. I shave my legs because A, it's pro. B, why would I bother to shave my legs? Or C, isn't it more aero?
I forget to shave my legs. I looked at my legs today and went, I should really shave. I forget. I can go months without shaving my legs.
So I'm going to give you the why would I bother shaving
my
legs.
I forget about it. That's one of those things I forget. But I'm not very hairy. So if nobody notices.
Next question on the bike snob questionnaire. Sunglasses should be A, Oakley's, B, cycling specific, or C, protective against UV rays.
Protective against UV rays and also stuff in the road.
Okay, good. Your stem position is slammed always, which means way down low. Okay. Where the bike shop put it, or the best position biomechanically?
You tell me. You can answer that better than I can, because it's where you put it.
Yeah, I know. It's where I put it. I should have put it. That's where the bike shop put it, but I'm not a bike shop. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Used to be. Leaders jerseys and world championship stripes are for wearing on club rides, grand tour leaders, and world champions only for avid race fans watching TV.
I'm going to go with two, because I don't wear those. I think I have a shirt of yours, but I never wear it.
Right.
Yeah.
I wore a world championship jersey on Sunday's ride.
Oh, okay.
I was wearing one with world champion stripes on it.
Yeah, I don't usually wear those.
Yeah, well, it's the rainbow jersey. It's the, you know, well, anyway, never mind. It's important. It's important. Italian bikes are A, finely crafted machines, B, works of art, or C, overpriced rubbish.
A.
Thank you. Okay. Grand Fondos and Sportives are for racing your friends, winning, or sharing the road with fellow cyclists.
Sharing the road with fellow cyclists. I'm not winning anything. And what was the first one?
Racing your friends. I'm not racing anybody. Nah, it's not. It's we're already beyond it.
Yeah.
You carry your drink in a ring pull can, B, a bidon.
What's that?
And C, a water bottle. If you have to ask, then you probably don't want to choose it.
What is it?
I'm not entirely sure myself, but I do know the answer is a water bottle.
Yeah, it's a water bottle.
Right.
Well, they're practical. A pull can, that's not safe.
Okay, here we go. Pro kit. You know, pro kit. You know, you wear the pro kit. It's got all the pretty, everything's matched team and all that.
Right.
Okay. A, as pretentious as it comes. B, looking like a pro, or C, cheap at the end of the season.
Or D, I wear it.
There is no D. You can't make these things up.
So I don't care about wearing pro kits. I mean, I have a couple, but
yes,
I almost never wear them.
But you do for special events. I know you do.
No, but I wear my Cycling Concepts kit.
Yeah.
But I wear it because I'm supposed to I'm supposed to promote my team.
Right.
So what is that?
For looking like a pro.
Okay, go ahead.
Because it's your team.
All right.
That's it.
That's fine. But I'm not looking like a pro. I'm looking like on the cycling.
You're not being pretentious with it.
No, I'm looking at like the Cycling Concepts team. And not being a pro.
I understand.
This is a bad quiz.
Your favorite drink. I think it's hitting some soft spots.
No,
here.
It's just that it's when you have multiple guests, that's a lot of times some of the choices don't make sense. Like I take these Reddit quizzes and these quizzes on Facebook, and they have three answers and they're all wrong. What do you do with that? And then they tell you that you're, you know, on Shrek, you're Fiona, and you really identify with Puss in Boots. So what's up with that?
I have a simpler quiz after this. So okay. let's just get through this one, okay?
All right.
Your favorite drink is A, water, B, hand-picked heritage coffee beans prepared by genuine Italian baristas drunk from an espresso cup and co-designed by your favorite pro cyclist.
Oh, my God.
Or C, powered and full of energy.
Three is C.
Okay. What's your perfect frame material? Alloy, titanium, steel, or carbon?
Well, the thing is, it's what you give me, and I'm on a...
It's a four-question answer.
I know.
You just have to answer one of them.
I guess it's going to be...
I don't need an explanation.
I guess it's carbon, but if you said, Fran, this year I want you to ride a steel bike, I would ride a steel bike. If you gave me a steel bike, I would ride it. I don't care.
But what is your perfect frame material? What would you like?
At the moment, I don't know, because I haven't ridden a steel bike. Maybe I would love a steel bike. I have no idea.
You might love a titanium bike also.
All you do is you give me... I know I like the carbon better than aluminum.
Well, I'm going to put you down as carbon because that's what you ride and what you have been riding for
a number
of
years. And
I like
the carbon better than the aluminum.
Yes,
so.
Yes, you do.
And
so I'm going to...
What's my cross or my gravel grinder?
It's calculating. That's aluminum.
Yeah, and it's fine for what it is.
It is calculating. Okay. Here's your answer. You're not a snob.
Really?
Yes.
No.
You know a good bike when you see one, and you value a comfortable kit, but you're not a fan of overexpensive cycling fashion. You remember bikes are for riding, not for staring at. That's it.
You can stare. It's okay to stare at bikes.
That was your question. And then there's a second one from slowcyclist.com.
Yeah, I see
slocyclist.com. And
yeah,
are you a bike snob? Take the test to measure your road cycling skills. You might have to write these down so you get your numbers right here. 3 points gives you, you can give yourself either 1, 2, or 3 points per question. So if you're listening to this, break out your pencil and write these down. 3 points describes you exactly. Maybe you've even taken it to a greater extreme. 2 points, this is kind of you. You've done it once or twice, but you were appalled at yourself. And 1, nope, you've never done this, and who would ever do this? Okay, so weird fashion rules. 1, you adhere to some pretty strict cycling fashion rules. You never tuck in your sleeves into your arm warmers. In other words, arm warmers go underneath the sleeves. Not anyway, you avoid black socks at all costs. You never wear a pro team kit unless you're a member of that team. And you make certain that your sunglasses are outside of your helmet straps at all times, even for split seconds. You embrace riding around in colorful matching Lycra that's pretty much the same as exercising in a 1980s leotard.
Are your sunglasses supposed to be under your straps?
No, over the top.
Over the top. They're supposed to be over the top. I think I put mine under.
If you put them under, the helmet straps press against your temples and it hurts. It's not comfortable.
Maybe my helmet straps are too loose.
And there's a second part to that, too.
Yeah.
When you do that, you get more air noise around your ears.
Oh, so maybe I should be...
I'm a snob.
I think I didn't know that. I think I've been putting my glasses under my straps.
No, you put them over the top of the straps because that way you don't get as much wind noise.
Okay.
So, and especially when it's cold out and you're wearing like an earpiece, like an ear cover over your ears, if you put the glasses underneath that, it lets the cold air in.
I clearly don't get a 3 on this.
No,
because I like, if my black sock, if black socks go, 1, if I have clean black socks and they kind of go with the kit, I'll wear them. I wore black socks the other day. And 2, if the black socks go with the kit.
Okay, last sentence. The best way to embrace this awesome Lycra is to live by crazy rules so that you feel superior when others don't follow the proper fashion advice.
Oh, Lord. I'm not so 3 doesn't work.
So there's your weird fashion rules. I actually qualify for a couple of those because I have certain rules about how I have to dress when I'm on my bike. But anyway,
I'm a 2.
Moving it on. Yeah, I fall into the 2 category on that. Not completely snobbed out. Snobbing it up, 2. Perhaps you've made fun of a triathlete's bottle mounted behind his saddle. Maybe you've even fondly referred to it as bottomed water. You take snobbery to extremes, and you even know the
Velomonati
rules. You know better than to ride with excessively large water bottles. You make sure those smallish bottles match each other exactly, and you carry everything in your jersey pockets, never on your bike. The rules are vast, and they are unforgiving.
That's going to be a 1 because that's a lot of rules.
That's a lot of rules.
I mean, I don't care. I had a bicycle that had, didn't I have a bicycle that had a water bottle
in the back?
Cage in the back?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was fine. And I don't, you know, if somebody wants to be a triathlete, they could be a triathlete. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have it seems to me that if your point is you're going to do a time trial bikes have a certain
right.
geometry be it for a certain purpose. So what? Why you get so crazy over this?
There's always more in-depth here with Fran when we get into these things.
Yeah.
Nature breaks.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so it says here, you knew I'd go there. Are you guilty on this one? Do you at least stop and pull off to the side of the road when you go, or do you completely refuse to stop? I can explain that in a moment. I once asked a fellow cyclist why he had neat holes drilled in the instep of his expensive carbon shoes. He replied, so I don't have to stop to pee. It runs through the shoes and onto the ground. Doesn't get my frame grinding.
Oh, gross.
And there's a big oh after that. I avoid riding behind that guy on group rides. Are you nodding in agreement, or do people avoid riding behind you too?
I get a one on that. Oh my God, because I'm a little modest. I'm pretty modest.
You're
yeah, I need
modest.
I need to be in the woods behind a tree. And the other thing is, if I the other side of that is, you know, I used to be like my parents said that when I got toilet trained. I got toilet trained and then I wouldn't go anywhere else. So if my parents needed to take, we were out somewhere and they needed me to go in the grass, I didn't want to do that. I was very modest about that. And then when I went to Oregon, of course, I got with my dear friends, Francis and Lori and Stephanie, and we would all hang out and we would go places. And I would be the one who had trouble going in the woods because, you know, I was a Jersey girl.
Yeah,
but
I
eventually got over it. And then especially with cycling, you have to learn, especially when you're an athlete, you have to learn that you have to get over your bodily function issues, because if you keep that stuff inside you, it's just you're just going to be miserable.
Right.
So if you have to go to the bathroom, whatever comes out, mm-hmm. if you have a good place to let it out, it's a good idea to let it out. So, but on the other hand, I'm not doing it on my bike. I know that you know, people who are in long races, they want to do it off their bike. That will never be me. I mean, if I decide to do an Ironman, I will get off my bike. It's just too gross for
there
me.
There is a way
cannot
to do
handle.
That in a race, you know. I've explained this to you, right? Ugh. Where two riders slide off the back of the pack and one rider leans against the other rider and then does what they have to do.
If you're a guy.
If you're a guy, yes.
And if you're a woman, gross.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next question here. Rubbernecking. You have an incessant draw to check out other cyclists' bikes on a ride. Whether you're driving by in your car, walking down the sidewalk, or hammering past them, you can't quite help but check out a fellow cyclist's gear, setup, and bike fit. How often do you tell someone their saddle is too high, especially when they can't hear you? Or how often do you pass a cyclist a little too closely because you want to see what kind of saddle they're riding?
I'm going to go with a two for me, because I do that sometimes.
I do it often. So I qualify for a bigger number there.
Yeah.
Anyway, last thing, discount hunters, do you chase cheap speed? There are supplements, legal ones, folks. Yes, legal ones. Aero helmets, feather light pedals, you name it. You're bound to want just one more accessory or just one more bike or just one more set of bib shorts to match your jersey. Do you cope with all the want and the scouring of the web for 5% off? Beg your local bike shop for a few dollars in discount, or search Craigslist for used but pristine gear that you can lowball the seller for. Sometimes it gets so bad that you do the math on 16 different situations involving shipping, free shipping, no discount, local pickup, small discount, or whether the club dues will be offset by your sponsorship discount. So do you chase cheap speed? That's your question.
No, because you get me what I need.
You already get cheap speed. You're married to me. Yes. Okay, now let's tally it up. What was your score?
Let's see. 4, 6, 7.
Okay, 5 to 9 points. Don't worry, you're okay. You're not a snob. Boy, you've qualified twice now. Two different tests, and you're not a snob.
I'm not a snob in my life.
In fact, you might be a Fred or maybe a triathlete. Maybe you should make friends with a bike snob and even things out.
I am friends with a bike snob.
I know you are.
You're sitting right in front of me.
10 to 14 points. You're dangerously close to being awesome. You've got some rules under control, but you're still not afraid to break a rule here or there. You probably put in 4 times the miles of a bike snob. Well, no, probably not. And then 15 points. Ooh, you got this purist thing down. You probably have all kinds of kits on special hangers separated by compression qualities and whether or not you could be seen on the road with them. Some bibs that are only for riding on the trainer in a blacked out basement. You might consider relaxing a bit or keep building up some more snobbish habits. I'm not complaining because maybe there's a reason I can describe all these things so accurately. So anyway, that's the bike snob test as per the slow cyclist. And where do you fall? Are you a bike snob or are you just a person who loves to ride their bike? So anyway.
Well, I'm a little of both.
Well, I thought these were, I you are. You definitely have characteristics in both directions.
Sure.
For sure. So that's definitely there. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of a fun thing because we were segueing off of the bike snob thing and don't be a bike snob when you're out riding your bike. And then, of course, all this great stuff came up. So I figured it would be good to discuss. So but backing up to the original rant, don't be a snob on your bike. You know, just be friendly with people. Be a human on a bicycle. Be a nice person on a bicycle.
Even if you have to wear a pro kit.
And it's okay to wear the pro kit. That's not a problem. The problem is when you communicate with people like you have some sort of hierarchy over them. And that's a problem. That's a huge problem. That when you present yourself like you might be better than another person.
Well, hierarchy is a problem because to me, my MO is if you present yourself to me like you're better than me, you're already not as good as me.
Right. But the message that sends to the general public, those people out there that don't ride bicycles, is that, you know, you're some sort of special person,
right?
Or feel that you're some sort of special person. So don't do that.
As soon as people present as hierarchy, I feel bad for them because they're insecure.
We were on a ride this weekend, and unfortunately, we got caught in too many hours of rain. And we got pretty wet and all. But, you know, I make a practice of waving to cars when they pass us, or especially when they're really considerate. Or if you're at an intersection and they're kind enough to let you go through and or stop traffic for you so that you can get through safely. I'm always extra, you know, friendly with them and wave to them. And someone was with me on that ride and they said, I waved to everybody on my bike. I've taken that on as a good thing, a good practice. And it is because it sends a message out there. So anyway, moving on from bike snobbery, we don't want to be bike snobs. It's not good. Not good for any of us when you do that. So anyway, moving on, I have a few other things that I put on the list here. People for Bikes is it's peopleforbikes.org is the website that you can check. And it is a national group, and they're kind of cool. Actually, I'll pull it up a little bit. They aim to make bike riding better for everyone. They collaborate with millions of individuals, riders and businesses and community leaders and elected officials, uniting people to create a powerful united voice for bicycling and benefits. So they had, they have a bunch of things on their website, which are definitely worth exploring because you can get a little bit more information. And one of those items on there is bicycle commuting is preventive medicine, according to science. Massive studies find cyclists and other active commuters experience dramatically lower risk of dying from any cause than those who drive or take public transit. So this has just come out just in time for National Bike to Work Week, which is May 15th to 19th. A team of researchers from Glasgow University in Scotland found that people who bike to work slash their risk of dying from any cause, that includes riding the bike, by the way, by a whopping 41% relative to those who drive or take public transit. So this is something to certainly pay attention to because this was a 5-year study of more than 260,000 commuters in the UK. And they found that among the commuters, half men, half women, average age of 53, those who rode their bike to work, also lowered their risk of heart disease by 46% and their risk of cancer by 45%. So this is a pretty important piece. Though longer bike commutes bestowed the greatest benefits upon study groups, even short jaunts across town appeared to help beat disease. On the average, bike commuters reportedly riding about 30 miles a week, 6 miles a day, round trip. Even those who combine public transportation and cycling, such as taking the bus to the train partway, or enjoyed a 24% decrease in premature death from any cause. So kind of a good thing to know. It's a nice little piece of information. That one actually came off of Bicycling Magazine, which also has good stuff, but that was a link from People for Bikes. And then the other thing, another piece that they did right on the actual People for Bikes page is they have an article here by Kristen Butcher, and it's how does bike riding stack up against other types of exercise? And this I found kind of interesting because, you know, there's obviously many ways to exercise and many ways to get yourself fit. And if you participate in any of them and you're doing it on a steady, regular basis, a big tip of the cycling cap to you, because that's a really nice thing. And it's very, very important. But we're going to compare them to other forms of exercise, which are popular. One, first one being CrossFit. And both CrossFit and bicycling are known for their gluteal enhancing abilities. Yes, they build really strong butts. It's true. It's all true. And you get really trimmed out back there and everything looks good and it's a nice thing to do. But bicyclists aren't required to tell anyone about each bike ride. And oh dear, I think they're attacking the CrossFit people because they're constantly bragging about their last CrossFit exercise and their last PR. And anyway, so CrossFit is the winner on this one. Actually turns into, while CrossFit is building power through intensity interval training, bicycling spans the fitness gamut from muscle building, mountain biking, lung busting, hill repeats, and long endurance rides. Bonus, no rotator cuff injuries. That is a problem. There are a lot of injuries with CrossFit.
A lot of people are getting injured with. Well, the problem with CrossFit is it's so high intensity, and not only is it high intensity, but it's there seems to be. And if you are CrossFitters out there, and if you run a CrossFit studio, you can jump in and correct us.
But, oh, please, you can call us here right now.
But but I do see that there's kind of a CrossFit culture, and the culture is there's a harder, faster, stronger that you do. Exercises, you know, certain exercises until you're completely exhausted. And my concern about CrossFit and certain high intensity workouts is they're not sustainable.
Right.
They're so high intensity. To get yourself into a headspace to do a high intensity workout of any kind, you really have to be in a headspace. It's a lot easier to put yourself into a headspace to say, I'm going to go on the rail trail today and I'm going to look at the flowers and my pace doesn't matter and I'm going to go as fast as I feel like, and that's probably going to be really slow. I can very easily get myself into a headspace to do that.
Sure.
But to go to do CrossFit, and today I'm going to do the workout Fran, because there is a workout called Fran. The workouts have women's names.
Okay.
And they're very high intensity. You have to put yourself in the right mind space to do that. And as you said, you know, people who are exercising regularly are people who are going to do CrossFit. They're going to have money to join a CrossFit gym, and then they're going to have to be dedicated to it. They're probably going to be a little bit older. And as you age, you have to be careful when you do all this high intensity activity, because you are more likely to get injured.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do see injuries. And the other thing you see in CrossFit and other certain high intensity things is there's a greater risk of rhabdo.
Rhabdo?
Yes.
Which is?
Rhabdo is rhabdomyolysis. Rhabdomyolysis is this condition where, it will happen generally, it can happen to anybody at any time, but it is more likely to happen if you're doing a repetitive exercise at a very high intensity and you're doing too many of them.
Mm.
So whenever you do an exercise that taxes your muscles,
mm-hmm.
you're building up and breaking down muscle tissue.
Correct.
And so if you break it down too fast, you actually, the cells start to become inflamed and they start dumping myoglobin into your cells. So myoglobin is a compound that's similar to hemoglobin, but it's in your muscle cells and it carries oxygen to your muscles. And you start dumping this myoglobin into your blood. And if you dump too much myoglobin into your blood, it gums up your kidneys and you can have kidney failure. So rhabdomyolysis is very dangerous, and it is a risk of extremely high intensity exercise. And well, you can look this up. Rhabdo, the secret, the backdoor secret of CrossFit, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying it doesn't happen most of the time, but it's a risk.
Right, right. Well, the winner is bicycling, if you're wondering, on this survey here versus CrossFit. So bicycling is the clear winner on this. Next one on my list here is yoga.
Uh-huh.
Okay, instead of listening to Enya on repeat for an hour, bike riding is backed by the steady rhythm of melodic crunch of tires spinning on asphalt. Both yoga and bicycling hone spiritual and physical balance, and each offers ample opportunity to fall over in public. whether we're taken down by a tree pose or a new clipless pedal system at a stoplight. But the reason bicycling reigns supreme is that there's no spandex. Wait, bad
yes,
example.
Yes,
there is. At least with bicycling, Enya is optional. The winner? Bicycling. No Enya. I mean, you could, I suppose, but we really don't like people who are you know, cycling
what's
with
this,
your
which
headphones.
Survey is this?
This is on peopleforbikes.org.
Okay.
So that's where it is. And the caption on this, the button on that to push is riding is the best exercise. So if you're looking for it. Next one on my list here is running. Running offers many of the same benefits as bicycling. Both can be done out from the front door and enjoyed far from home. And each can be picked up easily yet refined through a lifetime. However, cycling's low impact nature makes it easy on the body. A new study from the Appalachian State University comparing bicycling and running concluded that runners experience more inflammation, soreness, and muscle damage after similar intense periods of activities, which makes bicycling a perfect cross-training exercise for even the most ardent runners.
Yeah, but so is swimming.
And clearly the winner here is bicycling again. So next on the list is hitting the gym. With bicycling, there are no weights to re-rack and someone else's sweat to wipe off the machine before using it, unless you're in spin class, of course. You don't have to wait in line for the bench or search for the dumbbell that another user was too tired to put away after 50 bicep curls. There are no gym memberships, awkward locker room conversations, or pretentious juice bars. Instead, bicycling offers free, unlimited access to miles of smiles. So clearly, the winner is bicycling.
You don't have awkward locker room conversations. You guys get in the locker room and you try to solve the world's problems.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I mean, the men's locker room at the Mansfield Community Center is, it's like those barber shops where they talk politics. You guys are all like, yeah.
Bicycling solves the world's problems. I have a book that proves it that I'm reading right now that Matthew Feiner dropped off the last time he was here.
So should we get Donald Trump and Steve Bannon a bicycle?
I suggested that last week.
Oh,
remember,
right.
I said that, well, actually, no, I suggested it to our good friend Scott Sales out in Montana that
right.
I wanted either the Burks or I'm trying to think of Mike Sinyard from Specialized or the Burks from John Burke from Trek to go out and hand present him with a brand new bicycle and let him and take him for a ride and get him to appreciate, you know, why bicycling is a really good thing.
Yeah.
But yeah. You know, it would be a good thing. Give him a free bike. See what happens. See if that changes him. So the winner clearly from hitting the gym is bicycling once again. Athletic hula hooping.
This is funny.
And it says, okay, fine, this wins. And they show a
it's a video of a big tough guy.
Video of this really big tough guy that's doing the hula hoop, and it's just pretty darn funny.
He does have big poofy hair.
Yes, he does.
He has big, yeah. You know, heavy curly hair.
He does it well. And everything else, the most effective exercise is whatever makes you happy enough to do it regularly.
Right.
And this is something that Fran preaches all the time.
Yeah.
What's the best exercise?
The one you'll do.
Exactly. We happen to be hooked on cycling, and that's why you are listening to Bicycle Talk.
And you're not listening to CrossFit Talk, and you're not listening to Running Talk, and you're not listening to Yoga Talk, even though I love yoga.
But I am certain that those are out there if people want to listen to them. I'm sure that there's a lot of enthusiasm for all these different things. But it's, you know, obviously we love the bike, and the bike has been my friend for a long time. The bike has done a really good thing for, it brought me across the country. It got me out to meet people. I've learned a lot from it. It's been a real confidence builder. It's just, there's a lot of good things I can say about the bike. And it's also a machine that makes sense to me because you can go places on it. You can transport yourself. It's very simple. It's very, very simple. It doesn't require a lot of afterthought once you've purchased a bicycle or you've found a bicycle or whatever it is. It doesn't take a lot to keep it going. So, you know, the bicycle is pretty important, I think. And it makes, it makes a lot of sense as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, that and, of course, it's preventive medicine, too. So that's another thing. So I have another subject here I'd like to cover today. And this was, I've got Fran on a roll here. So this is important because she is, obviously, Fran is a doctor, and she is a doctor of naturopathic medicine. She's very aware of different things medically that can happen. But there is an article that came out of Bicycling Magazine, again, under Health and Injuries, the 5 emotionally charged stages of bonking on the bike. So bonking, in case you don't know what bonking is that feeling that you get when all of a sudden you're pushing down on the pedals and there is nothing left. There is no energy. There is no power. There is a strong desire to get off of the bike and never look at it again. It's a problem, and you don't want to push yourself that far. You want to try to prepare yourself both physically and mentally for your ride so you don't have to run into this issue. I find that bonking comes from, primarily, personally, I find it comes from overtraining. People who ride their bikes, let's say, too much, too far, too fast, too little, it could be anywhere in that range.
And they don't, their nutrition is off.
They're not training right. They're not eating right. That's essentially what is going to happen, and that's where you're going to run into the problem. One of the less desirable inevitabilities of life as a cyclist is bonking, and it ranks among broken chains, multiple punctures, and in the pantheon of it's not as bad as the day when I stories. So it's the human equivalent of a kite reacting to a strong gust of wind. Bonking is that ride end feeling that takes you from flying high to falling hard in a matter of minutes. Your tank is drained dry, your muscles shot. There's no solid scientific definition for bonking, says exercise physiologist Sean Burke, founder and head coach of Crank Cycling, but it's more likely linked to a glycogen depletion. High-intensity exercise requires carbohydrates like glycogen, and once the glycogen in your muscles is used, you have to rely on fat for fuel. Energy from a fat molecule is released more slowly than from a carbohydrate molecule. That means less power to the pedals. So what it really comes down to is you just basically want to avoid it, and it's a pretty simple thing to avoid. You need to put fuel in your body to get the energy out. Fuel in the tank, very simple. Put it in, but sooner or later, every cyclist will find themselves weeping into a pile of candy wrappers and wondering what they did wrong. For the uninitiated, this tearful tango has 5 simple stages. You look back hard enough, and you'll see how you danced through all of them. So we're going to go to the first stage. Denial. You suddenly lack the power you need to stay with the group. Your vision blurs and it's hard to hold a straight line, but you decide that it must be because you're going so hard. You decide to grit your teeth, push on, sit in the wheels, or even attack, and everyone else must be suffering as well, right? Well, not really. Not really. How the, so on the, you know, you're depleted. It's not a good thing. I have a real problem with people who get depleted on a ride and won't admit it or communicate with the people on the ride and say, hey, look, I'm having a problem. I'm starting to die off. And instead, they press on, like that article that I was just reading said, and they push so hard that they cause an accident. And it's, you have a, I would say, a 75% better chance of causing an accident when you're in this condition.
Of course.
Than you would if you were physically fit and prepared for your ride. So it's not worth pushing yourself that hard. There's a point of no return. There's a point when you're going to do bodily damage to yourself or to the people that are around you. So it all comes from, once again, not training well enough and stepping out and doing things that are way over your ability level. So you have to be very careful about that. Right. Another thing that I see is I see people going to a point where they're looking at a big ride up ahead, and let's say they're training for, or let's say they're not training for, but they're fantasizing on doing their first 100-mile bike ride or first century. This is kind of a classic. And they go, well, you know, I can ride 50 miles, so I can certainly ride 100. And they don't train for the 100-mile ride, and it's not as easy as it looks. Once you get over 60 miles, everything starts to break down. It's sort of like running a marathon. You hit mile 20, and then the last 6 miles are the most important miles of the race. It's you don't understand what your body's going to go through, so you need to train for that. You need to prepare your body for it, and you need to do slow increments of distance, changing, getting longer and longer each weekend as you're building up. I like 85. That seems to be my magic number for a 100-mile ride. Once I've done 85, I feel very comfortable with a 100-mile ride.
Yeah, well, I start to 70 miles is my critical point when
you start breaking down.
Yeah, right. That's if I'm going to cramp, that's when it starts. 70 miles, there's something magic about 70 miles.
I used to give you goo at that time, and that solved that problem. I remember you having that problem, and then I would say, "Look, do this," because I'd look at our mileage and I go, "Oh, we got to give Franny some goo now."
I do the electrolyte tabs, and that helps.
Yeah, yeah.
But I probably am going to start carrying pickle juice.
Okay, so stage two of your bonking is anger.
Yeah.
Your world becomes 25 millimeters wide, and all you can focus on is the wheel of the rider in front of you. Okay, it's 25 millimeters is the width of a tire. So you want to scream at your buddies for attacking you at this moment of weakness, even though they're just spinning away and chatting. You know it's your fault, you didn't eat enough, but you want to blame everyone else. There's the anger. That's stage two, the anger. If only your buddy hadn't half-wheeled. If only your energy gels tasted like cupcakes. If only everyone had... just put some cupcakes in your pocket. They work. If only everyone had listened to when you had wanted to stop for cookies.
Chocolate goo tastes like icing.
It becomes clear that the whole world is trying to sabotage your ride today. And it succeeded because you're angry. Okay, on the inside, your adrenaline levels are spiking. Your body knows it's on its last legs, but this evolutionary failsafe is giving you just enough energy to climb a tree, especially with a saber-toothed tiger chasing you no more. So anyway, this is, that's anger. That's anger. Stage three, bargaining. Okay, you know enough about bonking to realize that your glycogen stores are running low. Maybe you just sit in, eat a gel, you'll be okay for the next climb. You pat your empty jersey pockets, hoping to magically conjure up more ride snacks, and you desperately beg your cycling buddies to slow down until you can find a convenience store to provide you with the sustenance that you need to tame the chasm that has somehow replaced your
chasm.
Right, your stomach. You know, I say this often, and I know I get argument from Fran on this, but if you feel hungry, it's too late. And I've been a firm believer of this for a long time, but if you're starting to feel hungry, you should have eaten earlier.
No, and I think if you're hungry, you should eat.
Yeah, well, exactly. But some people don't get the hunger attack until it's too late. And when you get that hunger attack, if you should have been eating, how many people have I brought? You've known me for a long time now. How many people have I brought out on their first 100-mile ride?
No, I know. And you
quite
make
a few,
eat.
Right. What do I do when they're not hungry? I make
you
them
might
eat.
Make them eat, but you have to realize that, Ron, that most people are not like you, and I emphasize most people are not like you. That if I ate before spin class like you do, it would sit
not,
in my stomach
I'm
and
not
I'd
saying
I'd
that.
Feel
we're,
horrible.
We're talking about a 100-mile ride here. But if you don't start eating at 20 miles on a 100-mile ride, you are doomed.
That's a generalization. So what I would say is
how
that
many people that I brought on their first 100-mile rides have made it?
It's a generalization because you can't make general statements about everybody and their nutrition, how their metabolism works. Now you people have to figure people the answer is that people have to figure out their nutrition. And for me, if I was going to ride a century ride, I would try to eat a little something before I started, but if I couldn't, I wouldn't. But I would start eating as soon as I had any impetus to eat at all. I wouldn't wait certainly until I was bonking, but as soon as I felt any sort of hunger at all, I would eat something. But you have to understand that people are not like you. Most people's metabolisms are not like yours. I personally don't feel hunger until several hours into my day. And I also, if I'm doing a short workout, I generally work out fasted because I'm able to do that because I'm fat adapted. You don't have the genetics to be fat adapted. So it's going to really depend on the person. Everybody has to figure out the nutrition. I would say that if you're one of those people like, oh, I can't look at food until, you know, an hour into the ride. An hour into the ride, look at the food. As soon right. as you feel any impetus to eat at all, eat. But don't right. wait. But to say you definitely must eat at time X, what if the person's queasy and nauseous? What if they simply can't do it? I mean, there's no point in putting food in if it's going to come back up.
Right.
And it's not going to do you any good. Your body's not telling you that it wants it. On the other hand, you're absolutely right that people do tend to underestimate how much nutrition they need on a ride. And if you're going to do a 100-mile ride, you're going to have to eat something at some point. You can't. Most people can't do even me, who's fat adapted, I can't do a 100-mile ride fasted.
And there is a calculator at Bicycling Magazine also that you can go to. It's www.bicycling.com/training/calorie-counter. And you can go there and you can put your weight in there and you can put your cycling speed pace, let's say 14 to 16 miles an hour. You put your weight in and you put the time of which you are going to be out on that ride. So if you put that all together and then hit the calculate button, it'll give you a pretty good idea of how many calories you're going to burn. The interesting thing on this calculator, which I find really interesting, is that if you're, even though you haven't changed your speed at all, if you're out for an hour longer, you're going to burn 1,000 more calories.
Wow.
So I just, you know, the point is, so the people that are going for these, you know, 8 and 9 hour century rides, they're burning a lot of calories.
Yes,
they're burning
of course they
way
are.
More calories than the 6 hour rider is.
Right, right.
So the point is that you're using fuel out of the tank, and the tank is only so full.
That's
so
right.
Therefore, you have to eat.
And you also have to train because when you train, you become fat adapted and the eating becomes less of an issue. I mean, the longer, and having said that, people who are very experienced can bonk. But when you're experienced with your nutrition and you are trained, you become more fat adapted and you don't need to eat as much.
Right.
You know, and right. I know that I had to really ramp back my eating over the years because people think.
Running out of time here.
Yeah.
So I'm going to just finish this off very, very quickly here because we have stage 4 is depression. You suddenly find yourself sobbing in your spandex, wondering why you decided to skip breakfast. Again, that is food related. And then the last one on here is acceptance, that you pull over to a convenience store and you basically you wander the aisles like an extra from Dawn of the Dead. You pull over to the curb, sit down, eat some food, get back on your bike, and then finish your ride. But it's and I have done that with people before where they've gotten to the point where I found them on the side of the road and they're done. And so I'll just sit there with them and I'll eat with them and I'll get them going again. I'll put water back in them and then give them, you know, 15 or 20 minutes, then put them back on their bike and they're fine. Anyway, that is that is what I've got here today. We could spend a lot more time talking about this. We may need to go back to the whole nutrition and cycling. I think we could probably do a nice show on that just to talk a little bit more about it, because there's a lot to it. There's a lot of factors involved. There's body weight. There's body type. There's a lot of things that there's metabolism, as you said, and we definitely need to explore that further.
You could have me as a guest.
I could have you as a guest. I kind of did today. Oh. You were kind of my guest today.
All right.
Got a lot of involvement from Fran, my good co-host here.
Yeah.
So anyway, my name is Peddlin' Ron, and you have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, the lovely Fran Storch.
Happy birthday, Ron!
A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. Remember, you can reach me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com, or you can visit Bicycle Talk on Facebook. And remember, you can also hear the podcast of this show and other episodes on whus.org and also on iTunes. So please send in your comments. We'd love to talk to you. We'd love to hear from you. And we'd love to do a show on your interests on cycling. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.